YLP in Belfast, Maine, 100.9 on your FM dial.
Support for Belfast Community Radio comes from our listeners and J. Black Printing, providing design, print, and copy services from business cards and more. Located at 3 Black Landing, Belfast, call 338-4040.
Listen to the kids' show on Saturday mornings, 9 o'clock on Saturdays.
Welcome to Books and Writers, the show for writers, aspiring writers, and those fascinated by writing. I'm your host, Spencer Stevens. On Books and Writers, we'll talk with those who know writing is both an art and science, who know how to make writing work, how to get it noticed, how to find inspiration, how to avoid ruts, and how to get out of them. We'll discuss the habits, habitats, and brains of writers, editors, publicists, bookstore owners, publishers, and others. We'll talk about the books that should have succeeded but didn't, about the writers who ignored the rules and succeeded anyway. We'll look at works in progress. We'll lead you to being a better writer, or at least to a deeper appreciation of your favorite writers. Our guest today on Books and Writers is Nancy Marshall of Marshall Communications. She's the company's founder, principal, and namesake. She founded Marshall Communications in 1991 and specializes in public relations and publicity for individuals and industries in a variety of fields. If you are an author and you're looking to build an audience, she can be an invaluable asset to you by helping you to become known to an audience. Nancy and Marshall Communications have done work with authors Paul Dwaran, who does the Mike Bowditch series, also Ken Schultz, who's a sport fisherman who's written extensively on the sport. She also does work for industries as varied as Wyman's Blueberries and the Maine Office of Tourism. Nancy's got a bachelor's degree in French and American Studies from Colby College, and she has an MBA from Thomas College in Waterville. She's been recognized many times by the leaders of her industry. She's received numerous Golden Arrow Awards from the Maine Public Relations Council. The council has also given Nancy the Edward L. Bernays Award, its highest honor. Nancy is also the host of the PR Maven podcast. I'm happy to have her here today. We want to learn from her a little bit about what it takes to gain publicity for an author, what it takes to find an audience and to make an audience aware of what you as a writer might have to offer. We're here today with Nancy Marshall of Marshall Communications to talk about publicists in general and what they can do for writers. And Nancy, maybe we could start with just the basics. What do publicists do? What is there that a writer should know about the work that folks do in your profession?
Well, first of all, Spencer, thank you for having me on the show. I'm very excited to be here with you. And publicists are always seeking ways to raise the profile and the notoriety of their clients, whether it's an organization or a company or, in this case, an author. There's nothing better in the world in marketing than somebody to say, oh yes, I've heard of you, or I've heard of that. And so publicists try to generate publicity so that people will say, oh yeah, Spencer Stevens, I've heard of him. You know, he's the author of the new book called Blood Lily. And so because word of mouth marketing is the most powerful marketing that there is anywhere, and that's when somebody says, you know, gives a recommendation to a friend or a family member or a professional associate. So publicist's job is to generate ultimately that word of mouth marketing, so people will say, yeah, I've heard of that.
Excellent. So and give me an example of the things that you would do to help publicize a writer's work to make sure that people had heard of them and were using word-of-mouth advertising on their behalf.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'll say, Spencer, that there definitely is a difference between advertising and public relations or publicity.
Yeah.
Advertising is something that you pay for, and you're pretty much guaranteed that if you buy an ad in the Wall Street Journal or in Time Magazine or on the Today Show, you're guaranteed that you're going to get that time and space, and the message will be exactly as you put it out there. But with public relations, there aren't guarantees, and so it's a little bit like gambling. It's a little bit like going to Las Vegas, because with public relations, you're hoping that an editor or a journalist will find your story compelling and newsworthy, so that they will share that story. And as a result, it's more credible in the eyes of the reader, because people know that the things that are communicated in the pages of the newspaper or on television or on the radio, that things that are part of the stories told by journalists are vetted appropriately, as opposed to ads, which are paid for. So the kinds of activities that publicists engage in are generating positive relationships with journalists that are based on trust. So when a publicist reaches out to a journalist, like, for example, the editor of the Portland Press Herald or the Bangor Daily News here in Maine, or, you know, the producer at the show 207, you know, that you can suggest stories that will be newsworthy, and that's the key. Those editors don't really care to help you advertise. Like, if you say, I want to advertise my book, they'll say, sure, call the ad people, and they'll be happy to take your money for an ad. But instead, we seek to find a newsworthy hook. And, Spencer, can I give your book as an example?
Sure, go right ahead, Nancy.
So your new book, Blood Lily, which is coming out this week, and which I'm helping you to promote, it ties in with newsworthy stories related to authoritarianism, as well as the newsworthy incident of the terrorism that happened at the Boston Marathon. So as we are approaching journalists now, we are tying in with these newsworthy incident, well, that newsworthy incident of the Boston Marathon, but also the authoritarianism that is happening among leaders of the free world. And so that's how we try to get what we call a news hook. So you're tying in with the kinds of stories that journalists are telling. Again, it's a subtle difference, but an important difference. If you as an author are doing your own publicity and you reach out to the local newspaper sort of with the expectation that they owe you a story, they don't feel like they owe you anything. Their obligation is more towards their readers or their viewers, and they want to be presenting content that ties in with what's happening in the world at any given time.
Sure. So I would imagine then that a big part of your profession is staying on top of the news, watching for trends and approaches that journalists and editors and others might be employing.
Exactly. A big part of our job as publicists is not only staying on top of the news, but who's telling it and trying to figure out how it's generated. You know, when I look at the Wall Street Journal, for example, I'm looking at bylines, and oftentimes it's a little bit of adult ADHD, I think, because I'm reading the Wall Street Journal, and I'm looking on Twitter, actually, to find those reporters and see if I can follow them on Twitter, especially if they're writing about topics that are related to my clients. So here's an example. You know, my company is working with Wyman's right now, which is the largest frozen food company, actually, in the country. It's located right in down East Maine. The Blueberry Barrens, the Wild Blueberry Barrens, are in Cherryfield, actually, which is sort of funny because it's a town called Cherryfield, but it's the wild blueberry capital of the nation.
Yeah.
But so I'm constantly looking at magazines and newspapers to see who's writing about anything related to frozen fruit, or certainly wild blueberries. Then I go over to Twitter and I see if I can follow them, because I want to have a direct connection on Twitter, because most journalists are tweeting throughout the day, actually, and they carry on conversations among other journalists on Twitter that you can actually see, and that's a great way to make a personal connection. I also connect with many journalists on LinkedIn as well, but Twitter is kind of more where there's an ongoing dialogue where anyone can kind of insert yourself into some of those conversations on Twitter. So that's kind of my secret bullet, to be, or the key, I think, to success in PR right now in this day and age, is to make a connection with journalists, so that then when you pitch them a story, they're going to sort of be familiar with who you are and what you represent.
And I would imagine for any journalist that you make a pitch to, you're interested in seeing what stories has this person written before, what approaches have they taken, what perspective might they have.
Exactly. That's very important, because there again, if you think about how journalists, they are not there to help you promote your book. They are there to serve their audience. So they want to be, and they also, a reporter is going to be, you know, working for an editor who is going to be editing the story to make sure that it is accurate and well written, and that there's a newsworthy hook. It's not all fluff. Actually, on slow news days, you know, when there's not a lot of news going on, that is a time when you're more likely to be able to get something that might not be considered hard news out there, because, again, journalists need to put out news every single day. So, for example, right now the Olympics are going on, and there's a lot of news happening related to the Olympics. So this isn't really a good time to get something that's considered soft news out there, unless there's an Olympic tie-in. For example, if you've been watching the news lately, there's been a lot of news about this shoe company in Lewiston, Maine, that's manufacturing the shoes that the U.S. team wore during the opening ceremonies. And so that was like a great tie-in for this Lewiston company called Rancourt Shoes. And I would never even know the name of that shoe company or have any awareness of them if I hadn't seen them on television almost every day since the Olympics started. So that's an example of a company that really leveraged the newsworthiness of the Olympics.
If we transfer the lessons and the knowledge that you've obtained into the world of writing, can you give us some ideas of what would you would do for a writer who was looking for the opportunity to stand out?
Sure. One of the authors that I've worked with is a guy named Ken Schultz. That's S-C-H-U-L-T-Z. And he wrote a very seminal book in the area of sport fishing called Ken Schultz's Fishing Encyclopedia. And when I was handling his public relations, I was able to get him onto a court TV show, a national TV show, about the ethics of fishing, actually. And he engaged in a debate with a Boy Scout, actually, about, and this Boy Scout was tied in with PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. And so Ken was representing people that thought that sport fishing was ethical, and the Boy Scout was saying that it was not ethical. So that is an example of a national television show that I was able to get my client on. And it was not a show about fishing, and it was not a show about books.
Sure, yeah.
But, again, and this is something you and I have spoken about, I think one of the best ways to do PR is to get people, to get your client or your author into unexpected places. So another example is I've worked with Paul Dwaran, who's the main mystery author, who I'm sure a lot of familiar with. I know you spoke with Paul, or about Paul recently with Nancy on the show from Left Bank Books, and he has a new book out called Dead by Dawn. But when I was working with Paul, he came out with his book, Widowmaker, and we were able to get him in the travel section of the Boston Globe. And the angle for that story was, you know, all the different places in Maine that he had described in his books, and how, as a reader of his books, you could visit these places yourself. Ironically, one of the places was actually Sugarloaf, the ski resort where I used to work, and then another place was Saddleback, which has been a client in the past. So we talked, or he talked with the journalist from the Boston Globe about visiting those locations in Western Maine.
Sure. So it sounds like the creative part of your job is looking for places where readers might be giving their attention, looking for tangential subjects or tangential locations where readers might be looking or reading, and getting the names of your clients inserted into those locations.
Exactly. You want to, yes, fish where the fish are, if we go with the fishing parallel or analogy. The other thing is, in this day and age of the internet, if someone were to Google your name, you want a lot of content to show up in a Google search from a variety of sources. How PR has changed, you know, over the past 20 years with the growth of the web, is that if somebody searches on your name, you don't want your own website to be the only result that shows up. And if somebody searches your name and there's results that show up from television shows and from radio shows and newspaper and magazine articles, as well as your own website, then somebody's going to say, wow, this person is really interesting and must have a lot of interesting things going on. One author who recently published a book here in Maine, Gigi Georges, she came out with a book called Down East recently, and I have been impressed. And I did meet her personally with the Maine Seacoast Mission in Bar Harbor this summer, but she's somebody who has been able to generate a great deal of publicity in a variety of places, and it feels to me like I've heard her name in the news repeatedly. So the impact that has on me as a reader is, wow, this must be a very interesting author, and I really want to read her book, which actually I did, and it was a very good book. So, again, it goes back to what I talked about at the beginning of this interview, is like when people are hearing about a book or an author repeatedly in a variety of places, it gives the impression that author is important and that book must be important. So you should read it.
Sure.
And share it with others.
I've talked to a number of authors who seem to believe that if they write an excellent book and publish it, that word will spread, that people will find out about it, and it will become popular and it will sell. And let me ask a question with an answer that may be a little obvious, but is that a successful strategy typically?
Well, that's a longer-term strategy. I mean, if you are really interested in selling a lot of books, it's probably not the best tactic to take, because your excellent writing might be discovered long after you're gone from this world.
Yeah.
So I really don't think that, I think good writing, you can get lucky and have somebody read it and like somebody who's very influential read your writing and tell others. I know you've given the example of a president who was carrying a book title. What book was that you talk about, Spencer?
That was The Hunt for Red October by Tom Clancy. My recollection is that Ronald Reagan was spotted carrying that going from the White House out to the helicopter on the White House lawn. Somebody spotted that, and next thing you know, Tom Clancy's a best-selling author.
Right. So it would be interesting to know if Clancy had engaged the services of a publicist, or if Ronald Reagan had just come upon that book on his own. But my guess would be that Tom Clancy had a publicist, and that someone had recommended it to Ronald Reagan. That is an example of how having someone who's influential help you promote your title is going to help spread the word. And the whole category now of influencers, that's a whole new category that we're dealing with in our profession of PR. Again, we didn't really target influencers back in the day, but now certainly in travel and tourism writing, or travel and tourism publicity, we look for people that have huge followings on Instagram or Facebook or a variety of social media platforms to try to get them to talk about our clients. And that's another strategy that authors can take, is to get their book into the hands of influencers and ask them to talk about the title. Now, some influencers need to be paid, and it's considered like advertising. So not all influencers will endorse a product or a book without being compensated.
Yeah. I noticed that in an awful lot of cases, when I go to the bookstore and look at the books on the shelves, among the first things you see inside the front cover are endorsements from other authors who are saying what a great book this is. Is that in the same ballpark as what you're describing?
Yes, that is similar. And certainly if you can get a renowned author to give you a blurb that you can use in your book, that's a very good idea. I mean, for example, in my book that I published in 2015 called PR Works, I did have a blurb from Paul Dwyer himself about the good work that I had done for him. And then I had several other influential people who I quoted on the front and back cover. And then my book that I published last year, 2020, I had blurbs from many industry leaders in the PR industry. Again, so that gives you the credibility when somebody who is considered an authority in the field or a thought leader will endorse a book. That helps. So,
sure.
Yes.
I'm wondering if there are success stories that you have heard of in recent years about book promotion that might highlight some of the creative strategies that a publicist might employ for a writer.
Well, I mean, some writers are very good at getting themselves seen and heard with other important people. I mean, Stephen King is coming to mind, but
One story about book promotion or book success, I should say, that comes to my mind as kind of a unique success story is 50 Shades of Grey, a book that I will offer my own humble opinion. It wasn't the best written book I'd ever read, but it became incredibly popular. And it did so through what appeared to be organic means. But I'm curious what lessons someone like yourself or a writer interested in gaining publicity for their book might take away from that particular episode.
Yeah, those 50 Shades of Grey books were not certainly the best written books, but they did get into a pretty spicy subject area. And I think one of the ways that they took off was popularity with book clubs, specifically groups of women, because it was quite titillating.
Yeah.
And so I think the author of the 50 Shades of Grey series was able to get those books into the hands of a lot of book clubs, and that's something that certainly is a good strategy. I know some authors include book club questions right in the pages of their books, and if you don't do that, then certainly you should have those book club questions on your website, so that when book clubs are searching for titles to talk about, they will find that you have thought about book clubs as part of your promotion strategy.
Sure. Now,
but I think authors, I think by nature are introverts, and they're not really social as I am, certainly.
Yeah.
But I think one thing that you need to remember as an author is that you need to put yourself out there, as uncomfortable as that might make you feel. But people want to connect with you as a human. And I wanted to talk about the Olympics, how, you know, when you watch the Olympics on television, you're not just seeing the swimmers or the gymnasts performing their sport, but you're hearing the stories about their lives and about where they came from and their upbringing and the challenges that they've faced. And that makes you relate to them as humans. And it's really the same with books and authors, is that if you can relate to the stories of those authors, you're going to be more drawn to their books. And an example of, you know, Stephen King, so many people know about how he got hit by a car over in Bridgeton, Maine, and all of the challenges that that posed in his life. And, you know, again, that's kind of one more story about Stephen King that I think resonates with people. And it gives people something to talk about when they're talking about his books. How Bangor is kind of, well, that's his hometown, and I know there's a lot of tours that you can take to see the places that Stephen King has written about in the Bangor area.
Stephen King's story resonates absolutely. The example you gave of the Olympics makes me think a little bit about one of the rules of writing that Kurt Vonnegut espouses, which is you should always give your reader somebody to root for. My thought is it probably gets people invested the same way that a little blurb about a Croatian swimmer that you see on the television news coverage gets you interested in that swimmer and the race that they're participating in.
Well, I laugh because that makes me think of Paul Gloren's books. You know, Mike Bowditch is the lead character in his series of books. And, you know, Mike is a bachelor, and he has had these two girlfriends, Stacy and Danny, throughout the books. And at the end, well, I don't want to give anything away, but, yeah, I think different readers root for different girls that they hope Mike ends up with. So I know I personally am rooting for Stacy, but then there's this Danny, and so Danny Tate is this state trooper that Mike Bowditch has gone out with. And so I know exactly what you mean. You know, the more you become engaged with the book, you do relate to the characters. And I know in your book, Blood Lily, Spencer, I really enjoyed kind of getting to know Nora, and I don't want to give too much away, but Nora does spend some time in Maine, and I could really picture in my mind the places that she was going, and when she was in Mid-Coast, and that makes it relatable.
Absolutely. I'm going to guess there are different kinds of publicists, and for the uninitiated, for the writers who are part of our audience, who are just getting a formative understanding about your profession and the work that you do, can you shed some light on that for us?
Yes, there are different kinds of publicists. Most publicists will have an area of specialty, and there are publicists that only do book publicity. And they have sort of a formula that they follow as far as, you know, reaching out mostly to the book editors and book reviewers. My agency, Marshall Communications, handles several different industry pillars, as we call them. And so our approach to publicity is going to be more broad-based than just focusing on those book pages or the book editors, where we're going to be trying to get into those unexpected places, like we talked about earlier with Ken Schultz getting onto Court TV, for example.
Mm-hmm.
There's other publicists that specialize in political campaigns, and they'll only deal with, you know, candidates for office, for example. So it really, you know, when you're approaching a publicist, you should have an idea of what kind of results that you're looking for. And I know one of my areas of interest and expertise is what we call personal branding. I actually have a certification as a personal branding strategist from an organization called Reach Personal Branding. And what that means is I try to tell the stories of my clients that helps differentiate them. You know, if you want to be remembered for your personal story and your background. And Spencer, you have a very interesting background because you have been a reporter yourself as well as a practicing attorney and now have come to Maine and settled in Belfast, Maine, where you're writing. And I think that's a really interesting story, that how your career has unfolded over time. And I think that that story is, again, something that people can relate to. And it seems like a very romantic lifestyle, although I think right now you're seeing that it's not a matter, you don't just get up every day and sit at your desk and write. You're doing a lot more than that. And I think that leads to one of your other questions about, do authors just write books and then finish one book and move on to the next? And I think you're seeing that there's a whole lot of marketing that you need to engage in to get the word out about your book.
Yeah, that's been my observation and my experience is that as much time as you spend writing and developing characters and plot, if you want to gain an audience, you probably should be spending just about as much time developing that audience, promoting your book, making sure that folks are aware that you're out there and what you're all about.
Absolutely. You know, and to some extent, I face the same thing with my agency. You know, I have to spend time promoting the agency as well as serving my clients. So I think that in almost any profession, you need to balance, you know, doing the work and then work, you know, working on your business. And in the case of an author, your business basically is the business of publishing and promoting your books.
Sure. And backing up for just one second, we were talking about the different kinds of publicists, the folks that do books, some that do politics, some that focus on a segment of business or industry. And my guess is, tell me if I'm wrong, that those folks are probably employing the same rules from one industry to another. They're just the big difference might be the range of individuals they reach out to as part of their effort to gain publicity for a particular client. Am I on the right track or am I viewing it wrong?
No, I mean, the tactic or the strategy that we use is to identify the ideal target audience, and we actually create what we call avatars, who are personas who represent the audience. So if you start by focusing on who is the audience that you want to attract, and then what is the message that you want to relay to that audience, and then what are the ideal tools to connect. So let me give you an example. If you're trying to promote a book about knitting, well, actually, there's probably two different target audiences. I mean, there's a lot of older women that are knitters, but actually knitting is becoming very popular with younger people as well. So,
both my daughters are into knitting. They're in their 20s. Yeah.
So if we were to picture the avatar of your daughters, they're in their 20s or 30s now.
Yeah.
So, and they're probably on social media a lot, I would imagine, and maybe influenced by things. I imagine they might look at Pinterest, for example. So Pinterest is a social media site that has a lot of things about cooking and arts and crafts and sewing and things like that. So Pinterest would probably be be a very good place to communicate a message about knitting. So that example, we looked at who is the target audience, and then what is the message. You're talking about knitting, and then how are you best going to connect. But if you're trying to communicate with older people, they might not be on social media quite as much, so you might want to do a direct mail campaign. Or, you know, you might want to get an article in the newspaper because a lot of older people are newspaper readers, less so. I mean, I don't know, do your daughters read newspapers, Spencer?
They read news sites. I doubt it's happened too many times that my daughters, who are both in their 20s, have actually picked up a paper version of a newspaper and read. It's probably pretty rare for them.
Yeah. I had an article in the Boston Herald 2 Sundays ago for one of my clients, and my son, who is in his 20s, lives in Boston, and I asked him if he could go pick up a copy of the Boston Sunday Herald so that I'd have the hard copy to give to my client, and he responded that he had no idea where to even go to buy a newspaper. I thought that was pretty amazing. So getting back to your question, Spencer, though, with any assignment, I like to look at the target audience first, and kind of paint a picture of that persona who is going to be the buyer of any product or service. Then I look at what is the message that we're trying to communicate, and then I make a list of the tools. And when I say tools, that would be anything from having a special event where you invite people, or doing a video that you put on YouTube or on social media, or doing a direct mail campaign. And then for each of those things, you have to decide if you're going to use paid or earned media. And again, that goes back to what we talked about. With paid, we're talking about like things like paid advertising, and you can do paid social media like Google AdWords or paid ads on Facebook or Instagram. And then what I focus on is what we call earned media, where you're earning coverage by pitching journalists. And in that case, you have to have a newsworthy pitch that they deem to be something that a journalist would cover.
Right.
And not just something that's promotional.
And I've noticed in your profession and in mine, a surprisingly large percentage of folks seem to have experience in journalism. A lot of former journalists become publicists and become writers, both. Have you seen the same thing?
I have seen the same thing, and I will say that some publicists get frustrated if they're former journalists. Journalists are accustomed to getting a callback. For example, if I'm going to be writing a story about someone for the Portland Press Herald, and I reach out to that person, they'll probably call me back. But publicists get a lot of rejection. You have to be comfortable with getting rejected, because not every journalist is going to think your story is interesting. So over the years, I've gotten a little bit tougher, but back in my early days of my career, it used to hurt my feelings. Especially traditional newspaper journalists, they can be a little bit gruff and abrupt with you. Like, you know, when you call it, "Hi, I'm Nancy, and I'm calling to promote skiing at Sugarloaf," and they'll just sort of bark at you and say they're busy and they don't have time to talk to you.
Yeah, I can remember days when I was on Deadline and I would get phone calls like that, and I had no choice. It was self-preservation. I had to say, I can't talk to you right now. Please leave me alone.
Exactly.
Yeah. I have noticed and read that with a lot of publishing companies, book publishers in particular I'm referring to, that a lot of them are cutting back on the amount of resources they devote to publicity. And I'm wondering if you've seen the same thing and why that might be.
Well, because it's time consuming and it's expensive. know, to employ really good publicists. You know, good publicists are, you know, expensive as far as payroll, and I think that a lot of publishing companies might hire recent college grads to do the publicity, and then it's kind of more formulaic. In the case where they have a standard media list that they'll use for almost every book title, and they put out a press release, and then they do a little bit of follow-up, and they might have the author go on a book tour where they're speaking at bookstores. And even a book tour is very complex to organize because you're trying to schedule these book talks at bookstores and then publicize them locally. So I think that paid advertising is sometimes more it's more simple to it's more simple, although that is also expensive. So it's marketing is complicated and expensive and time consuming.
Sure.
And that's why a lot of publishing companies have cut back on it.
Yeah. Well,
actually, I will also say this, Spencer, that I know a lot of publishers expect authors to do a lot of their own marketing, and they'll only work with authors who are already well established. So when a publisher is considering a manuscript, the decision is not only going to be based on the value of the writing in the manuscript, but it's also going to be based on whether the author already has a platform or not.
The lesson I've taken away from what I see is if you're an author, even if you have a good publisher, you may want to think about hiring a publicist on the side to make sure that your book gets the attention you'd like it to have.
Absolutely, but I mean it's an investment, and you know, you have to decide if you are willing to make that investment. I mean, of course, I think it's a very good investment, but you know, it's a long-term strategy. I think I've talked to you about how, you know, you plant a lot of seeds and you're not sure how many of those seeds are going to actually sprout up and produce a good harvest.
Right. Yep.
But, you know, we're going after a lot of different angles. We're going after, you know, people that do book reviews as well as journalists that are reporting about topical areas like the political areas or trends such as, like, you know, books from Maine. And actually there are a lot of Maine authors. I think this morning I forwarded you an email from the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, and they put out an email just today with about 15 new titles. And so that's another angle that authors in Maine can take, is to work with the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance to promote their books there.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess that if a writer hires a publicist, they can't assume that the writer can sit back and just assume everything will be handled. They're going to have to expect to be actively involved in that process as a general rule. Would you agree with that?
I totally agree with that. A publicist cannot work in a vacuum, and if they do try to work in a vacuum, it's not going to be nearly as successful. To have a client or an author who's a client who's totally engaged makes all the difference in the world. And sometimes there are opportunities that arise that require a really quick decision. You know, I could get a call today from one of the journalists that I had pitched, and they might say, yeah, we have a hole in our news show tonight at 6:00. You know, could your author do a Zoom call? And in that case, I'm going to need a really fast response. So, yeah, the author needs to be prepared to jump when the publicist's job.
Sure. They have to be accessible, they have to be flexible, and they have to become engaged in your work.
Right. Like, you know, if I called you, Spencer, and said, I have a chance for you to appear on the 6 o'clock news tonight, and you said, oh, Nancy, I'm having a bad hair day. No, I don't want to do it. I'd be like, Spencer, you've got to do this now. You know, this is what we've been working for. So, you have to be flexible and available and willing.
Well, for those of us who sit home all day and write, a bad hair day is almost every day.
Well, Spencer, you could put on a baseball cap.
Yes. I could and I would, absolutely.
Oh, we should talk, now that we're talking about that kind of thing, having a professional headshot is very important also. That's something that you did recently. So... that's sort of like kind of one of the basics that you're going to need, and a publicist will ask you for, is a headshot and ideally a shot of you holding your book also. I actually have one that I hired a photographer to take when I came out with my book last year, Grow Your Audience, Grow Your Brand. And that's just something that most journalists will want to go with their story.
Sure, sure. Okay. Back to the newbie writers, the folks learning fundamentals about publicity. How does a writer evaluate options? How does a writer evaluate publicists and make a choice that they're going to be happy with?
Well, I think a writer should ask a publicist for advice and then allow, allow that author to interview, you know, other clients that you've handled. And a publicist should also be ready to talk about some of the results they've generated for their other clients and the impact that had on the sales of the book. Now, I think that's kind of a very basic
sure
method. Now, a good publicist should have a website that would list clients and include some testimonials and samples of results as well.
Sure. So step one for a writer looking to begin the process of finding a publicist would be a simple Google search for publicists and an examination of the websites that the publicists that they might have in place.
Exactly. Right. And again, you want to find a publicist who has handled authors who are similar to you. If you're looking at a publicist who's handled somebody like Stephen King, for example, I'm just guessing you might not be able to afford that person.
Yeah.
But maybe you have a trust fund and maybe you can. But, publicists are probably generally going to be looking to handle authors kind of in the same categories or the same, who've had similar amounts of sales of their books.
Sure. On the flip side, if a writer trying to evaluate publicists, what sort of things should they look for that might signal that they're looking, that they're talking to somebody who's not compatible, whose perspective or whose experiences don't match up with their needs?
Well, again, if you're, it could be political in nature. I mean, if you're an author who has a certain political leaning, you want to make sure that the publicist either has a similar political leaning or has no political leaning. So, for example, if you are writing books about conservative politics, you probably wouldn't want to hire a publicist who specializes in liberal politics. That's one example.
Sure.
If your book is nonfiction, again, I come out of the industry, but I also have a great deal of experience with golf industry and sport fishing industry, so you may want to hire a publicist who comes out of a certain industry background. Again, I would look to authors that are similar to you and find out who their publicist was.
Sure.
Or authors that you aspire to be like.
Sure. When I was in the process of searching for publicists, one of the challenges I found was trying to find somebody whose imagination and creativity were suitable to my project. You work with the state Maine Office of Tourism, the state of Maine Department of Agriculture, and it occurred to me that you probably know a lot of people, not only in state government, but in the media, who can help promote products and services that are of interest to the Maine Department of Agriculture, Maine Office of Tourism. That appealed to me a whole lot about your background. But I'm going to guess not everybody has that sort of thing. Not every publicist candidate can offer that sort of thing. And is there anything in particular that tells me I'm talking to a publicist who really is not a good match, or maybe who lacks enthusiasm or creativity?
Right. Well, you can find out if that publicist has enthusiasm just by talking to them on the phone, I think.
Yeah.
That's an easy thing to figure out. But finding out if the publicist has a strong network, you can do that by looking at their LinkedIn profile and seeing how many connections they have. You want to work with a publicist who is well connected and has a broad network of people, both in journalism but also in public office and community leaders and influencers. Because yes, it is very important that you're working with somebody who can pick up the phone and make a call or send an email and get a response, certainly.
Sure. One characteristic of a good publicist, this is my opinion, I'm curious to see if you think I'm on the right track or not, but one characteristic of a good publicist seems to be an effort to continually expand one's circle of influence, the range of people that you have as contacts and acquaintances and colleagues. The larger that circle, obviously, the more opportunity a publicist would have to promote a product or service that a client might offer. And I'm wondering if, well, in our conversations, Nancy, it seems to me that you certainly qualify in that respect. I see signs that you're talking to people at all levels, high and low, in Maine. And do you think that I'm on the right track here? Is that sphere of influence a big deal? And how do you tell if a publicist has that or not?
Right. Well, I mean, I think one important trait of a publicist is to be able to pick up the phone and have a conversation with somebody, and sometimes somebody they don't even know. And I will say that a lot of younger people who have grown up with smartphones are more adept at kind of hiding behind emails and texts, and some are a little bit leery of actually talking on the telephone. So when I'm hiring staff people, I want to make sure that they're able to talk on the phone with somebody that they've never met before. So I think that's really important. And again, you can find that out. That's kind of like finding out if somebody's enthusiastic or not. When you have a phone call with a publicist that you're considering hiring, make sure that they actually can carry on a conversation on the telephone. So that's certainly important. And then, it's important that the publicist is well connected in the state where they're working. I know sometimes some authors hire publicists that are in New York City because there's a lot of PR firms in Manhattan specifically. But I can tell you just from personal experience that when a Maine newspaper writer or even TV from a New York firm, again, there's not as much of a connection. That might be like a one-hit wonder where, you know, they might be working with that publicist one time, but I know that my team and I are working with the main media on an ongoing basis. So for us to maintain those relationships is really important. And part of that, too, Spencer, is that when a journalist does a story on one of my clients, I try to send them a handwritten thank you note.
Always a good idea.
Handwritten thank you notes are kind of part of my arsenal of tools that I use just to help strengthen those long-term relationships. When somebody receives a handwritten note in the mail, they notice that. It differentiates you as a publicist from the ones that just use email or text.
Sure, sure. And for... Again, I'm thinking of our audience as we talk today, authors who are learning basics about employing a publicist. How early in the writing publishing process is the right time to hire a publicist? And sort of the flip side of the question, are there benefits to hiring a publicist to promote a book that has already been published and maybe has been out for a year or two?
Well, I think it's a smart idea to have an ongoing relationship with a publicist, if at all possible, because I think that a publicist can be looking for opportunities to get you in the news, even between, even when you're not publishing a book. But again, to gain that brand recognition for your name as an author, again, so that people can say, oh, yes, I've heard of that author, and I'm looking forward to reading his next book. So I guess I would say that it's a good idea to hire a publicist as soon as you can while you're working on your book.
Sure.
And don't wait until you've already published the book.
Sure. Okay. Our guest today is Nancy Marshall of Marshall Communications, a publicist who works with authors and others. She's a Maine-based publicist with offices in Portland and Augusta. Nancy, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time with us today and your expertise. It's been a pleasure having a chance to learn all about you and your profession.
Thanks, Spencer. And if anybody wants to follow up, I have actually two websites. One is marshallpr.com, and the other is prmaven.com. That's prmaven.com. And I host the PR Maven podcast, which people can find on all the podcast players. So that's a place where I talk about public relations and personal branding on an ongoing basis.
Wonderful. Excellent. Well, again, Nancy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Spencer. Have a great day.
Again, our guest today was Nancy Marshall, founder, principal, and namesake for Marshall Communications.